Play. Kids love it. Brains need it. But people don't always understand it. Here to help explain it, your hosts, Keisha and Heather. They're knee-deep in play.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Knee Deep in Play. I'm Heather, coming to you from Nova Scotia, and
I'm Keisha. Hi, everybody.
And she's way over there in Maryland. Anyway, so we were just chatting about how different programs have different lists of things that, you know, they sort of think are things that they should definitely have in their programs. And we were just chatting back and forth about that. And so Keisha and I thought we would just, you know, start recording and have our conversation while chatting with you guys. So I know that in the art area, I'm curious, Keisha, do you ever have Play-Doh as well as regular clay, or do you just like just having regular clay?
No, I like both. I have them both. I have them at different times. I love to make Play-Doh with the children. I love to make Play-Doh for the children. I think they both serve different purposes, and they both have... While obviously they're both a fine motor development tool, little do the children know, but they're definitely great for fine motor development. Obviously, clay has more solidness to it, or more less pliability, so it works those muscles even harder. So it's great for that. But I think Play-Doh has its place as well. I know that the play is much different between the two. I feel like when children are working with clay, it's more of a sensory experience. And if they're not really exploring it sensory-wise, it seems to me, in my program, at least with the children, to be a very arts-driven and creative experience. Where with Play-Doh, for me and the children that I've worked with, usually seems to go more towards a dramatic play for some reason. It usually is made into food, or typically it's food. Typically what I see is made into food and then becomes a part of the dramatic play. And I don't often see that with clay. I'm not sure if it's because we present it differently or what it is. I don't know if the color of Play-Doh conjures up something in them to make them think about food, or maybe it's the smell of it. I'm not sure, but when they're working with clay, it's either a very sensory or art-focused experience. So we have both because they both are used differently.
So our team, I've been trying to get them to only have the clay, but we've been experiencing a lot of challenges with the clay. So we do wind up having the Play-Doh. Some conferences I had been to sort of encouraged just having clay and not having the Play-Doh. So we've thought about it and reflected a lot on it as to what our values are and our beliefs are around it. But I sort of feel similarly to you that they serve different purposes. What about plasticine? Do you ever have plasticine?
Nope. No, I have not. Explain to me what that is. I've heard that word before, but I'm not sure if I'm thinking of the same material as you're thinking of. So what is that?
So plasticine, it's usually you buy it in, almost looks like sort of long rectangular bricks, and when you buy it, you usually get like a red one, a blue, a green, a yellow, and it has a very distinct smell to it. It's very, very hard and not very malleable when you first hold it, and you sort of have to push your fingers to sort of smudge some of it off. But as you've been holding it for a little bit and it warms up in your hands and you start to work it, then you can. So I find it very, very, very challenging for the children, particularly younger children. But I have seen preschoolers, once they figure it out, like it's definitely, as well as tactile, it's definitely, you know, a bit of a cognitive problem-solving kind of situation, because they have to really think about how to get it to respond to their hands. So we don't use it that
much. That's something that I'm going to look for.
Yeah.
I remember the word from my own experience in art as a child. I remember the word. And as you're explaining what it is, I remember it slightly, but it's not something that I've ever had in my classroom. So I will look into that, especially for the older children who have had tons of experience with Play-Doh and tons of experience with clay. It will be something different for them.
Yeah, it adds another layer to the experience. Are you familiar with the storybook, The New Baby Calf?
No.
By Barbara Reed. It's an absolutely gorgeous storybook. I swear you would love, 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 love it. It's actually written by Edith Newland Chase, but it's the pictures are done by Barbara Reed. And the fascinating thing is that the pictures themselves are done by plasticine, like they're photos of, you know what I mean? Like they created them. So I'm just Googling it really quick, because the minute we started talking about it, I thought about it. I know that we certainly had the book at our program, but I'm just wondering if we still have it, because now I'm going to have to look. It's such a... Like when the children look at it, oh, now see, of course, I can see some other ones. Oh, there's a book called 2x2, illustrated by Barbara Reed, that's also the plasticine. But the children, they wind up having such wonderful discussions about the book because of it's very three-dimensional, the pictures, and they wind up wondering. So, I'll have to make a note to dig those books out as well.
Yeah, put a link on the website or on the app or whatever, so that people can see that, because I'm interested in that.
Yeah, I will do that for sure, because those pictures can produce fascinating discussions with the children. And if you have those books in that area when you have the plasticine out as well, that's an interesting invitation. I mean, of course, you never want the children to feel that frustrated by looking at the photos. That wouldn't be the goal, of course. But generally, I don't find they overthink it. They just think it's neat there. Because I've been going to these painting classes and things, we had had an art consultant. You and I had talked about how, whether or not some programs can have, I'm going to say the word wrong, I know I'm going to say it wrong, but an atelista, is that the word for?
Artillerista.
Okay. So while we don't have a regular person who has that role at our program, we did have an art consultant who has had that role in other programs come in and work with us on our centers, because we wanted to make our art centers elevate them or evolve them into actual art studios. And so recently, since all of our team went and experienced a painting night together, he had said, how are you going to take that experience and bring it into the classroom? And so we're trying to reflect on that. And he had wondered if we wanted to bring our paintings in to show them to the children. And I want to have a dialogue with him about how children, when they witness something like that, when they see something that an adult has done, does it impact them in a negative manner when they go to create things themselves? Or does it, you know, because I know for years, way back when I first started working, if you ever had a child say, oh, could you draw me a dog? Can you draw me a picture of a dog? Or can you draw me a cat? I know many, many times that when I was very young and first in the field, other teachers would sit down and draw that for the child. And now I know that that's, you know, you would never do that because that it's the child should be able to have the opportunities to draw and create. And it's, you know, it's also the whole product versus process. It's sort of the same as holding up the egg carton caterpillar and saying, we're all going to make this. And then they try to make it look just like that one kind of thing. So, I mean.
Along those lines, and this was one of those moments where I knew better. And it was just a moment where I said, well, I just reproved it to myself. I think it was last spring, a student and I were sitting outside and we were sitting on a tree stump, but a low, you know, wide circumference tree stump, just sitting there, and we had talk. And we're both doodling, and she drew a heart. And just off instinct, I drew a heart. And immediately after I drew my heart, she X posed out and scribbled and said, yours is better than mine. And I said, oh, I know better. But that reminded me, and it goes to show exactly what can happen when we're making examples for children, when we're putting drawing something and showing it to them and saying, okay, this is what we're making today. It's impossible for them to reach that high standard. I think there is a difference between that and exposing them to art, exposing them to real art, exposing them to different artists' works, but not in the context of here, now you paint that, because I think that's where you get into the same exact situation where they feel like, I can't live up to that. So I think it's really important that when we do invitations or provocations that include observing an artist's work, we make sure that part of that dialogue is that everybody's work should be their own, and everybody's work is different, and everybody has their own technique. So these are this artist's ways of doing it. What are your ways? I think that's a very important conversation to have. I find myself often commenting, and I commented today, on how different everyone's work looks. How different, or commenting specifically on techniques I see each child using. And sometimes it inspires another child to use that same technique, but other times it inspires the children to continue to reach within themselves. So I think that's the most important thing when it comes to art and the art studio, is provide materials, a plethora of materials, and it doesn't need to be expensive stuff, but provide materials that the children can use to express themselves, you know, express themselves creatively, individually. So never, ever do we all make the same thing. We're never all making, like you said, a caterpillar. Or unless the children have been very interested in caterpillars and they run into the art studio and they say, I'm going to make a caterpillar, and they begin gathering open-ended materials and making their caterpillar. Then we're making caterpillars. But it's not going to come from me, and it's not going to include egg carton.
Yes, that's for darn sure, because we're not allowed to use egg carton.
Oh, you're not?
No.
Oh, that stinks.
Because they might cause salmonella.
Oh, everything causes salmonella.
Oh, I know.
Well,
everything causes.
I know. What were you going to say?
I said everything causes something.
Yeah, everything causes something. So let's talk about, we talked a little bit about the art area. I wanted, before we get off of that, I wanted to say something that's along the lines of what you said about clay versus Play-Doh. Same thing, I've heard, use crayons only and not markers, because crayons force the hands to have to put more pressure and use those muscles, versus markers where you really don't have to put in that much work.
Mm-hmm.
I feel the same way as I do with the Play-Doh and the clay, that they both serve different purposes. I agree. One does cause you to use your muscles in a different way, maybe a more vigorous way. But I don't think at least for me, is not a cause to eliminate the use of markers. I think markers can be used in a different way. They have a different outcome. They can be blended with water. They can be, you can color with a marker and then overlap with another marker and get a whole different color, whereas it's not the same with a crayon to do that. So I think that exposing them to those different things and having them go from, that vigorous work of a crayon to maybe a more streamlined, easy flow of a marker that may encourage them to do a different type of mark making. So I don't see it as a one or the other.
Yeah, I've struggled with that one as well. Because we've talked about it before, that I'm just going to just say it, that Bev has always been my big mentor, my big rock star, and she many, many years ago used Play-Doh, and then she switched to clay, and they don't have Play-Doh there anymore. So that's where that came from for me. But I see the purpose and the value of all of them, because they give the children different experiences. And she was the same way. She said no to the markers. And I'm with you on it. Is that, yeah, because she said that the crayons make the children work harder to actually, it prepares the hand better for writing, and it makes the children work harder and put more pressure in to actually create a mark on the page. And she used to say that a marker is just too easy. But I see it as exposing the children to lots of different types of media. I feel just as strongly that children should also have access to using chalk, to using pastels, oil pastels, mm-hmm. and to using, charcoal. I love charcoal. Mm-hmm. I mean, it can be a mess. There's no doubt about it when they mm-hmm. use sticks of charcoal, but it can also be a wonderful experience for them. The other thing is, a couple years ago, I was at a workshop where it was all about letting children use Sharpie markers. And mm-hmm. and that's something that some teachers might listen to this and say, what? Sharpie markers? No way. Reminds me of that Robert Munsch storybook where the children always wind up with the super indelible, never come off till you're dead kind of marks all over the skin. I love that story. But all of those things all have tremendous value. They all bring such incredibly different artistic creative outlets for
yeah,
them.
And the cognitive experience that it must be to experience those different materials, because you have to figure out, well, how does this one work? What happens when my children figured out, we did chalk pastels just last week, and they figured out the difference in the mark when you lay it on its side and rub it across. I have a lot of new children at the new school, and they figured out the difference. It looks different. It feels different. It marks different. The mark is bigger. It's not as dark. And those were the things that they were saying as they were working with this material. So just imagine when you add different materials and different experiences, not only just the different material that they're using, but different material that they're making marks on. So we often use fabric. We use 3D materials, things that stand up, things that aren't typically used for art. Foam we used to do sculptures last week. So I think the more interesting, malleable, pliable materials that they can use, the more thinking that goes into it, the more creativity that goes into it, the more imagination that goes into it. And as with the Play-Doh, I said how it goes into imaginative play. I noticed the same thing when they were making sculptures. They were making sculptures with wire and pipe cleaner on foam. And as they were creating, they began telling stories. This is a witch, and this is a forest. I have 7 trees in my forest. And if you go through this way, the witch is going to get you, and she's going to whack you with her magic wand, and you're going to disappear. And these are just stories they're telling as they're creating this piece. They are so invested in those works of art. they are and you know they're invested because they're retelling the story almost word for word that I dictated, and they remember it because it was theirs, and they really were invested. So that was awesome. I really just love to provide them with something that they haven't used in that way before. They've used foam, they've used pipe cleaners, but they've never used the two together to build a sculpture. So that was something new for this group of children, and it just ignites something inside of them. So I think it's important to continue to add. It's important and it's a necessity. It seems like we're talking about art this time, so we'll have to do other episodes. But it seems like it's a necessity and a must-have to have a variety of mark-making materials and materials to make marks on, and open-ended materials. Like I said before, it does not have to be expensive. You don't have to go to, you know, your local A.C. Moore or your local Michaels and get these very expensive materials. A lot of what I use are recyclable materials. The boxes that I use for our 3D collages were donated to us. They were tops of copy paper boxes, all white, perfect for the children to make into whatever they would like them to be. We once did beautiful paintings on they weren't printed at all, white pizza boxes that the local pizza company gave us because they weren't printed. They were all completely white, and the children had this, you know, this empty blank canvas to design on. So it's not always expensive materials. It's just allowing the children access to them to make their own masterpieces.
Okay. I'm with you. We're still doing art. I've got a whole bunch of other things I want to mention that we should have on the shelf or out for them to grab at. And obviously stressing open-ended, as you said. But I had this neat thought while you were talking about the sculptures, and then you sort of changed your voice a little bit and you were telling about the story about the witch and the seven trees. Mm-hmm. So I don't think our listeners know that we're developing this. And I don't know if Jeff will be upset with us if we talk about it, but we've been talking about developing some webinars with Jeff in that it would be similar to podcasts, but sort of an elevated version of a podcast where that our faces with Jeff would be on the screen. And so at that moment when you were discussing and you were doing that voice, I was like, oh man, this would have been an excellent webinar. Like, you know, necessities to consider having in your art area, because I was dying to see your face right at that moment. And for myself, I use my hands a lot when I talk. So I was gesturing about Play-Doh and clay and about the markers and the crayons. And so anyway, I was thinking, wow, this was sort of a really good example of adding that additional layer of engagement with people and building community and conversation and dialogue with people listening, because then you would actually see and you'd connect better, kind of thing. So totally agree with you. We at Kids or Kids Early Learning, we do not have enough opportunities for sculptures. And one thing, a couple of years ago, we had a consultant in with us, and she really tried to really get the teachers to think about ensuring that the children have the opportunity to do three-dimensional work as opposed to two-dimensional. So I love that you brought that up. I have often bought wire. I mean, you know, pipe cleaners, we always have pipe cleaners and feathers and that kind of thing, but
tune in next week for more art area necessities. This has been Knee Deep in Play. Join us next week for another episode. This has been an Explorations Early Learning Upstairs Studio production. Oh.